in this particular sequence of events is Tamar, David, and Absalom. And we want to look at the short term, and there's some long term consequences from the actions of all three of these individuals. Tamar is one of the daughters of David, and her brother is Ammon, but they have different mothers. So it's not a matter of incense, it's a matter of that they have different mothers. So he begins to have an affection for Tamar. And one day he has an affection for her, and one of his friends sees that he's down in the dumps and he's sorrowful, and he asks him what's the problem. And he tells him that he's in love with Tamar. And so this friend of his tells him that this little scheme that he can work up, where he can claim that he's sick, ask his father to send his sister down to bake him food and to feed him. And so he does that, unbeknownst to David. He does that. Seems like a logical request, and he does that. And so Tamar and Ammon, and we read this in 2 Samuel chapter 13, and what he does is she comes down and she makes him food, and then he sends all the servants out. And he tells Tamar to come into his bedroom and to feed him. Again, remember, this is her brother, so she's not aware of anything that would be unethical or wrong. So she goes in and feeds him, and when she does, he grabs her and tells her to lie with him. And to make a long story short, she does not want to do that, but he forces her, and he lied with her, and he commits fornication with her. Now, after the act is over, we pick up the story in 2 Samuel chapter number 13. In verse 16, it says, "No, indeed, this evil of sending me away is worse than the other than what you did to me." But he would not listen to her. Then Tamar put ashes on her head and tore her robe of many colors that was on her and laid her hand on her head and went away crying bitterly. After he had had his way with his sister, then he despised her. And when he despised her, he sent her away and wanted nothing to do with her. And then when she tried to plead that what he had done now was worse than what he had previously done in committing fornication, he laughs at her and tells the servants to put this woman out and bolt the door after her. And so now Tamar is devastated. And this end of this verse in 16, she puts on ashes on her head. That's a deep form of lamenting. And she tears her robe of many colors. That's an expression of the loss of her virginity. And so now she goes home. But when she comes home, the first person she sees is Absalom. Now, Absalom, in chapter 13 and verse 20, he tells Tamar, he says, "And Absalom, her brother, said to her, 'Has Hammon your brother been with you? Now hold your peace, my sister, he is your brother. Do not take this thing to heart.' So Tamar remained desolate in the brother Absalom's house." Now Absalom and Tamar are full blood and sister. They both have the same mother. And so he tells her to hold her peace. Don't do anything to him because he is your brother. And so she stays in the house of her brother in desolation and in mourning. Now the big question we have to ask about this is, what is David's take on all this? What is David doing about the sin of his son committing this atrocity with his sister? Well, what did David do? Well, when King David heard of these things, he was very angry. He is very angry. Here's the father of both children, both Ammon and both Tamar. And he gets angry. He's furious, but he is also indecisive. What is the penalty for what he had done? The penalty for what he had done is death. That's the penalty for what he had done. And if you go back and read the story, Tamar told Ammon that, "Go and ask our father for me. He will not withhold you from me. He will give his consent to let you marry me. Go and ask him. But he didn't want to do that. And so he did not do that. And so David is in decisive, and he does nothing to Ammon. He doesn't rebuke him. He doesn't punish him. He does nothing. He's just indecisive. Now, David is furious, but he takes no action. Now, David's failed on many levels. Number one, he failed in his duty to God. He failed in his duty to Israel. He's the king. He's an example. He's an influence for the nation. He's failed his daughter, Tamar. And he's failed his son by not disciplining him. But he's hindered by misguided fatherly affection. You know, sometimes we don't want to discipline our children when they do wrong. We think that's a cruel thing. The world thinks that's a cruel thing to discipline your children. He should have been disciplined. He should have been corrected. But he was indecisive and did nothing. And so he allowed his fatherly affections to blur his responsibility. Number three, he was hindered by the offender's rank. Ammon was heir to the throne. He was an heir to the throne of David at his death. And so that hindered him. But the greatest reason that I believe, if you study David's life, and if you study what happens here, the reason that David did not deal with Ammon is because he has lost his own credibility. How could he discipline his son for doing what he did with Uriah the Hittite's wife, Bathsheba? What would his son say? You committed adultery, you even committed murder, and took another man's wife, and you're going to correct me and you're going to criticize me? You see, David, in his mind, lost his moral compass. He lost his ability to be able to correct his children because of his own past sin. You know, and many times this happens in families. People are overwhelmed by their own shortcomings and their own mistakes that they've made in their own life. And somehow they said that removes them from the credibility to be able to deal with their children who have done similar things or worse things because of the conduct of their own life. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. God doesn't exempt you from your fathering and parental responsibility, no matter what you've done. We have a responsibility to our children. We have a responsibility to correct bad behavior. We have a responsibility to punish bad behavior. And we have a precedent to try to teach them the difference between right and wrong. And when men choose to do wrong, that there are consequences for that wrong. Did Ammon learn that lesson? Did he learn the lesson that there's consequences from doing what? Who would say that what he did was right? Nobody would say that what he did was right. What he did was clearly wrong. It was immoral. It was sinful. It broke the law of God. It broke the family ties that he had with his sister. He did all of these things, and yet his father's angry, but he does nothing. He's indecisive. What did his indecisiveness lead to? Now that's a short-term problem. But now he's got a long-term problem. And Absalom spoke to his brother Ammon neither good nor bad. For Absalom hated Ammon because he had forced his sister Tamar. So what you see here is that Absalom, he just really doesn't take a position. But he can't speak to the brother Ammon. He can't speak to him. He kind of just puts up with him. But he hates him in his heart because of the sin that he committed with his sister. And so now Absalom's going to make a mistake. Absalom allows his hatred to grow. He waited on David to react, and David did nothing. David was angry, but he did nothing, and that made Absalom even more angry. And so he's allowing his anger to fester. And he's allowing his anger to grow. And what he's doing is he is plotting. And he is going to take vengeance into his own hands. And he is going to have revenge on Ammon for what he did to his sister. So he's just biding his time. Excuse me. Now, he waited for the best time to seek revenge. Now, Aplin was patiently growing his hatred. What does he do? After 2 years that this event was done, he asked that his brothers and sisters come to his house for a feast. And he's having a feast, and he asked David to let Ammon come down to his house. And David, he thinks it's a little odd that he would ask Ammon, but he says, he's my brother. And so David grants his request, and Ammon goes to his house. And what he does, he tells his servants at the appropriate time, after they have been indulging for a while, you rise up and you kill him, and you take his life. And that's exactly what they do. And Ammon is killed. He is murdered by Absalom, at Absalom's command for vengeance on what he did to Tamar. Now, the word comes back to David in 2 Samuel 13:36. And it came to pass when they were on their way, the news came to David saying, Absalom has killed all the king's sons, and not one of them is left. So the king arose and tore his garments and laid on the ground, and all of his servants stood by with their clothes torn. But that was incorrect. That's not what happened. He didn't kill all the sons. He never intended to kill all the sons. He just wanted to kill Ammon. And he wanted to kill Ammon because he had violated his sister. And so he was going to take vengeance and retribution in his own hand. Now, sad, startling clarification. Absalom hasn't killed everyone. He's just killed Ammon. So it was, as soon as he had finished speaking, that the king's sons indeed came. And they lifted up their voice and wept. And the king and all the servants wept very bitterly. Ammon rapes his sister. He does nothing. Absalom kills his brother. He does nothing. Now I want you to think about something for a minute. You know what the Bible says about David? He says he was a man after God's own heart. To sound like a man after God's own heart? A man that lets sin go unchecked and unpunished? No. David was human, and he made some serious, serious mistakes in his life. And one of the most serious is what he does here with Ammon and Absalom. Because this mistake is going to have a long-term effect. Now, he's upset. And what does Absalom do? He flees from the wrath of the king. So he runs away. Now what does David do after Absalom runs away after he kills his brother? But Absalom fled and went to Talmah, and the son of Amnon, king of Geshur, and David mourned for his son every day. Now think about this. David's personal sorrow and grief is because Absalom is not there anymore. It's not over his sin. It's not over what he did to Ammon. It's not over what he did to Tamar. He's not sorrowful about that at all. He's furious about that. He's angry about that. But what he's sorrowing about is because his son is no longer with him. He's got his parental responsibilities mixed up. And so he mourns for him every day. David mourns every day. He mourns with the father's love for his son. He mourns the loss of his heir. He mourns to see his sons, his sins in his sons. Ammon's immorality is a reminder of David's own immorality. Absalom's murder is a reminder of David's own murder of Uriah the Hittite. It's staring him right in the face, and that's why he's indecisive. These sons have done exactly what their father did. We don't think our children notice what we do. Now, I was told a long time ago that children learn more by what they see than what they're told. What lesson did David teach his children with his actions with Bathsheba and Uriah the Hittite? You remember the punishment that God said besides the child dying? Do you remember the other thing that God said to David during that time? He said, the blood will never depart from your house. The very sin that David committed would be done by his own children in his own home, killing one son and violating one of his daughters. And he was indecisive because of his own sin that he committed in his life. He thought that that made him incapable of punishing and correcting his children because of his own conduct. Now think about that for a minute. If I couldn't correct my children because of their own sin in my life, how could anybody correct anyone? David acknowledged his sin was wrong, did he not? David accepted the consequence of his sin, did he not? He acknowledged that he sinned. He corrected it. And he mourned his sin all. Read the Psalms. Read Psalms 32. Read Psalms 51. He mourned that sin. He had godly sorrow. He couldn't undo it. He couldn't rewind it. He couldn't erase it. He had to live with it. But that did not mean that made him incapable of dealing with the sins of his own children. You still have a parental responsibility. No matter what shortcomings you have in your life, those children we brought into the world, we have the God-given responsibility to direct them, to guide them, and to discipline them. And nothing we do changes that. Now, will it change it in the eyes of his children? Surely it would. Could his children throw off the fact of what he did? Could they throw that up to him? Sure they could. But would that make their action any worse than David's? Would that make their sin any less than what David had done? Sin's sin, folks. It doesn't make any reason what your parents did or what your mother did or what your father did. When you sin, sin is sin. And even if your father or your mother did the same thing, that doesn't extract you from understanding that there's consequences when you do wrong. And these children are going to... Ammon paid with his life. What was the consequence of his sin? He ended up being murdered. Could that have been prevented? Yes, if David would have dealt with it. But David didn't deal with it. You see, the focus on his loss destroyed the joys for his life. Now, what joy does David have in his life now? He's lost the innocent son. He's lost Ammon by the hand of his own brother. And now he's lost Absalom because he's run away to hide. And people tell me that David wasn't punished. Oh yes, David was punished. But the sad part is, because he was indecisive and because he did not deal with his children, now they're going to suffer. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, that happens a lot in our society. You know, sometimes people live in an environment where they just keep repeating the cycle. It just keeps repeating over and over again. You know why? Because somebody doesn't stop the cycle. David should have stopped the cycle. Now, time helps to heal wounds, they tell us. 3 years pass. 3 years Absalom's been gone. David's mourned for him every day. In 2 Samuel chapter 13, verse 38 and 39, the Bible says, so Absalom fled and went to Geshur, and there was there 3 years. And King David longed to go to Absalom, for he had been comforted concerning Ammon, because he was dead. And he had been gone long enough now that the sting of Ammon's death is not as difficult as it was before. But he's still grieving for Absalom. Now, the Psalms show us that he turns to God for help. In Psalms 28 it says, "To you I will cry, O Lord, my rock. Do not be silent to me, lest if you are silent to me, I become like those who go down in the pit. Hear the voice of my supplication when I cry to you, and lift up my hands toward your holy sanctuary." Now, devastating news may come to us on a lot of different fronts. We have no time to prepare, but God is there. You know, we hear what happens to other people's families and things that happen. And we say, you know, this is what we would do. This is how I would have reacted. Let me tell you something, brethren. You don't know how you react until it hits you. You don't know how you're going to react until you're in it. Now, it's different when it's somebody else and you're on the outside looking in. But when it's you and you have to make the decisions and you have to make the determination what to do, it's a very different scenario. And your vantage point becomes very blurred and clouded. If we lose a wayward child, we should review ourselves, correct faults, if any. You know, it's always good to look at what we've done. When our child goes wayward, it's a good thing to look at what we've done, what we did and how we did it. There's nothing wrong with that. But don't let that stifle you. Don't let that make you indecisive not to do nothing. Because that's the wrong course. Let the departed soul to a perfect God. Let God help us lest we deny the joy to the living. Let God's providence over time and healing. What you do is you try to bring that child back to where he needs to be. Ignoring it's not going to make it go away. I don't care how much time you have. If you just ignore it and you never try to change the behavior, you never try to change what they did and show the wrong in it and show the consequence they suffered because of it, it's burying your head in the sand will not change that. It's just going to get worse instead of better. And you know what it's going to do? It's going to rob every bit of joy out of your life. That's what it has the potential of doing. That's what it did to David. That's what it did to David. Finally, he goes to Joab. And he tells Joab, "I want to see my father." And Joab ignores him at first. So you know what Absalom does? He sets his fields on fire. Because he wouldn't answer his request to go to his father and get him to come back. So Joab goes to Absalom, "What are you doing? What are you burning my fields down for?" He says, "I sent you word that I want you to go to my father and ask him to have me come back." So now, Joab does it, but he does it in an underhanded way. He sends a woman in there to talk about her lost son and about how long he's been away. And really, the story is all about Absalom. And after the lady gets done telling the story, David says, Did Joab send you here?" He says, "Yes, O king." He says he's talking about your son Absalom. So he allows Absalom to come back. He makes this concession. Absalom can come back, but he can't come in the presence of the king. He can come back to Jerusalem, but he can't come to the house of the king because David doesn't want to see him. So that goes on for a number of years. And now he tells Joab that this is worse than when I was away. When I was away, it was pretty bad, but this is worse. I'm back here and he won't even see me. He says, "I'm going to go see him and he tells his father, "If there's any cause of death in me, if you need to punish me, then you punish me." But David didn't do that. David kissed him and hugged him, told him it was good to see, and let him go back to residing in Jerusalem. He did nothing. Now I want you to get this picture. Ammon is dead. Tamar is living in desolation, and Absalom has killed his brother, and David did absolutely nothing about all three situations. You know what's going to happen? It's about to get ugly again. Now we have the third son, Absalom. We want to talk for a moment about David grieves for an insolent son. David was lenient and indecisive with Absalom. He let him return as an exile. And then after a period of time, he let him return to his own house. In 2 Samuel 14, the Bible says, "And the king said, let him return to his own house, but do not let him see my face." So Absalom returned to his own house, but did not see the king's face. Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem, but did not see the king's face. Do you realize what that means? 5 years have gone by. 3 years he was away. 2 years he's in Jerusalem. And in 5 years his dad has done nothing. What effect does it have on Absalom? What does David's indecision and his ignoring the problem, what effect does it have on Absalom in his relationship with his father? Well, let's see. So Joab went to the king and told him. And when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on the face of the ground before the king. And then the king kissed Absalom. He lets him come back. No punishment. No correction. Nothing about the past. Just let's go on from here. Was that the right course? No. Because what did he do next? Absalom, after this happened, Absalom provided himself with chariots, horses, and 50 men to run before him. Absalom is now going to play politics because he has a grander scheme in mind. He's going to punish his father, but he's going to punish him in a way that he knows it will hurt David. He's going to steal his kingdom away from him. How's he going to do that? Now, Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way to the gate into the city. So it was whenever anyone who had a lawsuit would come to the king for a decision, that Absalom would call on him and say, "What city are you from?" And he would say, "Your servant is from such and such a tribe of Israel." Then Absalom would say to him, "Look, your case is a good case, and it's right. But there is no deputy of the king to hear you. Moreover," Absalom would say, "oh, that I were made judge in the land, and everyone who had a suit or cause could come to me, and I would give him justice." What's Absalom doing? He's winning the hearts of the people. Who knows that he's out there at the front gate? David does nothing. And when it was, whenever anyone would come near to bow down to him, that he would put out his hand to take him and kiss him. And in the matter Absalom acted towards all of Israel, who came to the king for judgment, so Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. But you know what? He couldn't have done that, except that the king allowed it to happen. He's stealing the hearts of his kingdom, and he's allowing it to continue. Does Absalom respect his father? Not one little bit. Absalom doesn't care one thing about his father, and he doesn't care one thing about God. He's already proven that by killing his brother. So he has no regard for God. He has no regard for the king. And now he's going to try to take the kingdom away from his dad. Now, David now has to flee Jerusalem. Now a messenger came to David saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom." So David said to his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise and let us flee, or we shall not escape from Absalom. Make haste to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring disaster upon us and strike the city with the edge of the sword." David now flees for his life. On the run, as a vagabond with 400 men. And who is he running from? His son, who is trying to take away his kingdom. Do you see how this thing just kept progressing and getting worse and worse and worse? And why did it keep getting worse? Because David just let it lie. Let it lie. Ignored it. Took no action. Was indecisive. Did not correct bad behavior. Did not make consequences for the actions of his sons. And now is coming back to bite him. Now, I'm going to read you something from the pulpit commentary that I have in my library that I thought was an accurate assessment of what we've just been talking about. It says, "Chastisement without love is an outrage. No father is at liberty to plague or torture his child. But a love that cannot chastise is no love and reaps a poor reward. A child that does not at the proper time feel the father's rod becomes at last a rod for his father." I think the Lord said that in the Proverbs, didn't he? A man that won't discipline his child doesn't love him. Spare the rod, spoil the child. You heard that? That's a proverb. He said, "Beat him with a rod, he won't die, that you may deliver his soul from hell. Chastisement without love is an outrage. A love that cannot chastise is no love, and it reaps a poor reward." What did David's indecision with his children cause to happen? Ammon died. Tamar was violated. And Absalom now is trying to steal the kingdom of his father. Does David love his children? He mourned for Solomon. He mourned for Absalom every day he was gone. Did he love him? No, he didn't love him. He didn't love him because he wouldn't correct him. He didn't love him because he didn't punish him. He didn't love him because he didn't teach him the consequence of bad decisions. It was a violation of the law to take vengeance in your own hands. "Vengeance belongs to me, I will repay," saith the Lord. That's a sin. Rape is a sin. Murder is a sin. Rebellion against your mother and father, that's a sin that has a death penalty attached to it in the law of Moses. And David did nothing to correct his children. David is as much to blame for this situation as his three children are. David feared and tried to prevent his son's death. Absalom asked for advice. He says, "How can I make the people know that I disdain my father?" You know what the counselor told him? You know those concubines that he left when he ran away? David's concubines? You take them up there on the roof and you commit fornication with them in the broad daylight on the roof. And the people of God, the people of this city will know that you disdain your father. And that's exactly what he did. But I want to remind you of something that Nathan told David. He said, "You know this thing that you've done with Bathsheba that you did secretly? I'm going to turn around and I'm going to do this openly. And I'm going to bring this shame upon you in front of the whole nation. God has just done it. By what he did with those concubines, what David did in silence and in the dark and hidden, God has brought it to full light. Just like he told David through Nathan. Now, does that mean that Absalom is not guilty? No. And now they've got him cornered. And David sends Joab and the forces of David to go and to put down the rebellion. But before they leave, he tells the men and Joab, but be kind and treat my son with kindness. He says this to all the men. And so now Joab is on the run, and as he's running away, he's on a horse, and he gets caught in a tree. If you remember reading about Absalom, he had very long, thick hair. And he got caught in a tree. And the word comes back by one of his servants, one of Joab's servants come back and says, all the men are dead, and we saw Absalom hanging in a tree. He said, did you kill him? No, we didn't kill him. We heard what David said. We're not going to raise our hand to him. He goes, where is he at? Where is he at? So the soldier tells him where he's at. Now the king had commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai and said, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. And all the people heard what the king gave the captains and ordered concerning Absalom. Then Joab said, I cannot linger with you. And he took three spears in his hand, thrust them through Absalom's heart, while he was still alive in the midst of the terebinth tree, and 10 young men who bore Joab's armor surrounded Absalom, struck him, and killed him. And then they buried him under a bunch of rocks. But then the news comes back to David. The rebellion has ceased. If you can come back to Jerusalem, the rebellion has been squelched. What did David ask? What did he want to know? He didn't care about any of that. He wanted to know one thing. What about Absalom? The servant wouldn't tell him. But when Joab came in, he told him. He said, would that all of your enemies be like that man, Absalom. What is David's reaction when he finds out that Absalom has been killed in putting down the rebellion? Listen to David's reaction. And the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And he went up and thus he said, O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place. O Absalom, my son, my son. He's grieving over the death of his son. He expresses deep anguish, a father's love intensified by his own failing, a failure to lead by proper example, a failure to love and not disciplining. And you know what Moses said in Numbers chapter 32, verse 23? You know what Moses said? He said, be sure that your sin will find you out. David's sin brought all this pain and anguish upon himself and his family. He did it to himself. It's a consequence of sin. It's a consequence of indecision. It's a consequence of a lack of discipline. It's a consequence of lack of making people understand that there are consequences when you make bad decisions. You know, I learned very early at a young life that when you did the wrong thing, when my parents laid down rules for me when I was young, and they said, here are the rules, and when you violate them, this is what I'm going to do. I can tell you, I had a hard head, and I didn't believe it. But I learned to believe it. Because what my father did and what he said, that's exactly what he did. And I've learned, and I know, that when you make bad decisions, there are consequences for those, and there are repercussions, and sometimes they are worse than what you've done. David's grieving, but his grief is misguided because he is the one that put this grief on his own, these kids' shoulders because of his indecision. David reacts to Absalom's death. He's depressed and he's unable to function. So the victory that day turned into mourning for all the people, for the people heard and said, the king is grieved for his son. Now his men have just went out and took the kingdom back by force that tried to put the rebellion, and soldiers were lost. But he did not care one thing about that. The only thing he was concerned with that Absalom is now dead. But now he's got another problem. And the people stole back into the city that day as people who were ashamed to steal away when they flee in battle. But the king covered his face, and the king cried out with an awed voice, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, my son, my son." You know what he's doing? He's minimizing what his people have done for him. Instead of being thankful for the victory they gained him and getting his kingdom back, instead of being thankful to them and showing appreciation, he's grieving over the man that caused the whole problem. And he's more in depth with his personal grief than he is with his own men that risked his life to get his kingdom back. Is there going to be a repercussion from that? Yes. Now therefore, go and arise. This depression and extreme sorrow for his son, Joab was a true friend to David and challenged David's surrender to depression. He said, "Now therefore arise, go out and speak comfort to your servants. For I swear to you by the Lord, if you do not go out, not one will stay with you this night. And that will be worse than all the evil that has befallen you from your youth to now. You're not just going to lose your kingdom. You're going to lose your respect. And they're going to leave you and they're going to never come back." That's pretty harsh words, isn't it? To the king. If you don't go out there and comfort them, they're going to turn their back on you and they're never going to follow you again. What Absalom did is nothing compared to if he loses the faith with the people. What does David do? Then the king arose and sat in the gate and told all the people, saying, "Their king is sitting in the gate." So all the people came before the king, for every one of Israel had fled to his tent. He won their heart back. Woke up.
We need to learn how God deals with many rebellions. We need to lead the rebellion. proper form. I have to teach what is right. I have to teach what God expects. I have to teach what God demands. And then I have to show that when that is not followed, that there are things that will happen. And I must over his children can squarely be laid at his own feet. Because of his sin, because of his indecisiveness, because of his lack of discipline and discernment in connection with his children, and the lack of making them have the confidence. Here's what I want you to think. Short term, his hate. And it makes your heart ache. But long term, if we do nothing, pain that would be felt later by a child that cannot turn, cannot be drawn back, is far worse than any tender pain and uncomfortable. You know what the excellent example of this is? How hard do you think it was for God to allow that nation to be destroyed by Syria and Babylon? Did he love them any less than when he brought them out of Egypt? When he allowed them to be taken into captivity? Did he love them any less? He didn't love them any less. You know, he loved them in love. To make him suffer the consequences of his sin. And in the end, he saved them anyway. That's God's way. That's God's way. I don't have all the answers of why sometimes the best thing that we try to do don't go the way we plan. But I do know one thing, that God's way. They're not always the easiest way. They're not always the most comfortable thing. And they're not always the most easy thing in that. They're not. What they do is to give them time. And you don't wait. What does sin do to people over time? Pardon to where they feel no more pain for their actions. But when it's fresh, when it's new, when there's hope, that's when you have the end. And if you don't, then the pain in the end just becomes. How many times, right? God give you a chance. How many times did he try to turn?
How many times did he send prophet after prophet after prophet after prophet to get them to come back? But the time of God's patience ran out. And the time of God's patience will run out with the sinner. David grieved for three sons. An innocent son, an immoral son, an insolent son. But the grief, all three times, because of his own actions and his lack of parental responsibility. David was a man after God's own heart. That doesn't mean David was perfect. David made some mistakes, but David acknowledged his mistakes. And he acknowledged it before talking about God, if you read the Psalms. The Psalms are David's acknowledgement that he made a mistake. You know why God recorded these stories in this book? So we don't make the same mistake with our children. That's why it's in here. Thank you for your kind attention. Please take your psalm books out and turn to the song that has been selected. If you're here and you're not a Christian, we don't want to close this service without giving you an opportunity to become one. If you are one and you need to make some correction in your life, we want you to know that God loves you. He cares about you. Sin can be forgiven. If we can help you in any way tonight, we bid you to come forward as together we stand and as we sing.